Good morning. Welcome to Christ City. If I haven't met you, I'm Andrea. I'm one of the pastors here. And just thanks for joining us this morning for worship. So it's February. It's already the second month of the year. What's happening? It's February already. A couple of things as we get started. Yesterday was Lunar New Year. 2024 is the year of the dragon. So Happy New Year. Happy New Year. Also, February is also Black History Month. So happy Black History Month. The past couple weeks, we've been talking about story and like the importance of stories, how stories define us both as individuals and then communally, and they define where we've been, where we're going. And this month, certainly not only this month, but this month specifically is a time to intentionally hear and learn the stories of Black Americans, to honor the triumphs and the struggles of Black Americans, both now and throughout our country's history. And I think for our church community, this includes sort of like another intersection in what we learn from the Black church. Just the unique expression of God, what God is like, what God desires, what it looks like to take seriously a holistic gospel, to pursue justice, to pursue shalom here and now, to know what it is to lament, to know what it is to hold joy and celebration as resistance. So for those of us who don't identify as Black, I just want to encourage us to let this month be a reminder. Let it be a reminder to us that our intentionality is needed. Our intention to learn, our intention to unlearn, to make space to be alongside of our Black siblings in celebration and in lament, in protest, to encourage our Black siblings to take up space. We should do this all the time, and let this month just be a reminder to us. And I want to say to my Black siblings, as much as I can, we see you, we celebrate you. I know that you bear a particular and heavy weight at a multi-church. We see that, and I just I want to express gratitude for the ways that you bring your whole selves to this community, even when it's not wholly honored at times. To a place that has not always been and is still not always safe or ready. We still have so much to learn about what it means to center the Black experience. But it is a privilege to learn from you, to grow together, to see God in you, and our community is better because you're here. So I hope that you're able to be celebrated and validated in your experiences and value all the time, and especially this month. So happy Black History Month. So if you are just joining us, we are almost halfway, I can't believe it, we're almost halfway through our journey of learning to live. So it's a sermon series that also coincides with a curriculum all of our small groups are going through together. So at the beginning of this journey in January, we started by reflecting on the question that Jesus asks of us, the question that draws out sort of our desires, our wants. What do you want? What do you want? What vision of life are you striving for, whether for yourself or for others? And then we consider Jesus' invitation to us, come follow me, and I'll teach you to fish for people. Come follow me. And then the last 2 weeks, like I said, we've been reflecting on stories. So first, our stories, where we've been, where we've come from, like what we've been able to control, what we haven't been able to control, how our stories have shaped us into who we are. And then last week, we were reminded of God's story, sort of this four-chapter good news gospel story of creation, fall, redemption, and renewal. And we've been invited to consider how our stories fit into it. How do we fit into the bigger story? And in our storytelling, you know, we've looked back. We've been trying to see where God has been at work. And this week, we're looking forward. So this week, we're considering who we are becoming. Who we are becoming. I mean, we're always in a state of becoming, right? We're always learning to live. It's becoming. And when we're learning, I think there's like a trajectory that we're on, like a change is happening in us when we're learning. And learning like isn't just in our minds, right? It's displayed like, in our bodies and in our lives, what we're learning. It's like when you read something new from a book or an article or whatever, or you hear something about something new in theory, part of learning, I feel like, is often working it out on paper, like writing about it or scratching out the formula or by experimenting, like in a lab or experimenting in life. You know, it's part of our learning. And much of the time we learn by doing, right? Like you can't just think in theory, like learn about riding a bike or like learning dance choreography, like just thinking about that. You got to work that out on the street and on the dance floor, right? The way we learn a new language isn't just by studying it, that's a part of it, but it's by speaking it, you know? So I think it's the same way in this faith journey that we're on. So when we're talking about who we're becoming, when we're talking about learning to live, we specifically mean learning to live like Jesus. That's what we mean. We are striving to learn how to live as Jesus did, to live as Jesus would if Jesus was in our place, like in our context, our specific context. And Jesus showed us who God is and who he was and how he lived. He announced and inaugurated and lived the kingdom of God, which is where God's rule and reign in every life and every sphere of life is evident. And the Bible tells us that Jesus was the fullest embodiment of God, that when you look at Jesus, you see what God is like. Jesus was also the most human of us all. And he showed us who we were made to be. And one of our hopes for learning to live is that we would learn and know that there is a goal to this spiritual journey. There's like a destination, sort of a target goal. And not only that we would know that, but that we would seek for it, seek it and strive for it and live it. So we find that goal, that kind of future, in one of our verses this week. It's the verse of the week for learning to live. 2 Corinthians 3:18. All of us are looking with unveiled faces at the glory of the Lord as if we were looking in a mirror. We are being transformed into that same image from one degree of glory to the next degree of glory. And this comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. I love how Eugene Peterson translates this verse in the Message. He writes, and so we are transfigured, transfigured meaning transformed into something more beautiful. We are transfigured much like the Messiah, our lives gradually becoming brighter and more beautiful as God enters our lives and we become like God. That our lives would become more beautiful, that we would, by the power of God's Spirit in us, become like Jesus, that we would be transformed into the likeness of Jesus, that we would learn to live that way. So when I was in high school and I started making like a little bit of my own money, you know what I mean, like part-time kind of job here or there, when I started having some of my own money, the first big purchase I ever made for myself was a guitar, okay? I knew which one I wanted, I had saved up for it, and I walked into that guitar store and paid for it in cash. It felt so good. I just really wanted to learn how to play the guitar. Now I've heard some of like my guy friends talk about how they wanted to learn how to play the guitar to like impress a girl. I did not care about impressing boys with my guitar playing. That wasn't my motivation. I just really wanted to be Michelle Branch. Do you know what I'm saying? She was so cool. So I bought the guitar, and then I signed up for lessons at the local guitar store. So my instructor was like a middle-aged guy named Todd. He had long hair. He was very clearly in it for the paycheck, you know? But that first lesson, he taught me what a fret was. A fret are the little metal strips that you see down a guitar neck. He taught me the names of the strings. And then he taught me the chords to the song Good Riddance by Green Day. Classic. So that was my first lesson. And then I had to go home and practice. I played the opening to that freaking song ad nauseum that first month. Because I was like, I'm doing it. Like, I'm being a guitar player. This is what's happening. It's like, I think I decided like that month in the beginning that the measure of my growth on the guitar would be the amount of blood like shed from my fingers, you know? And I did, I played until my fingers bled, literally. Now, that was then. These days, I do not play until my fingers bleed anymore. Though, if you're around any Sunday that I'm leading worship with a guitar, you are going to hear me complain about how much my fingers hurt. So just prepare for that, because I don't play as regularly as I used to. But I measure my growth as a guitar player differently now than I did 15, 16. I so appreciated leading you all in worship with the guitar and Dave and Drew last week. At one point while I was rehearsing before Sunday at my house, like my living room turned into sort of like a, it went from like me practicing worship and turned into a living room jam session with my whole fam. That's pretty fun. And I think I've realized that these days it's less about like how much I'm playing or how many songs I've like memorized or know by heart how many I can actually do technically. And it's more about how much joy I get from playing and then who I'm playing with. And I think both of those things can indicate growth, right? They're indicating some kind of growth, but what kind of growth am I measuring? I think that's a question. And which one is worth measuring at any given point? I mean, I think this is similar to our spiritual lives. As we try to become like Jesus, how do we know that we're doing it? How do we even know? How do we measure growth in our spiritual lives? What does it look like to measure growth in our faith? Now, I think that there seems to be two ways that we've tried to do this, sort of like two ends of a measurement spectrum. Okay, so on the one hand, there's legalism. There's rule following. So like with legalism, growth is determined by measuring things like how often and how consistently you read the Bible, or how long and well-formed your prayers are, how filled up your journal is, if you've skipped any dates in said journal. Legalism measures like the amount of money that you're giving to a church, to a charity, to a T. Like every cent measures your faithfulness. For some of us, legalism measured like how high above the knee our clothes fell. Like gave us the understanding that faithfulness equaled how little skin was showing at any given time. I think for some, particularly in older generations, legalism measured faith in whether or not you drank alcohol or danced or played cards. That was true in my family. And I get that this one can be tough because there can be a really thin line between rule following and intentionality, right? We do need intentionality. And to be fair, legalism does measure something. It does measure something. But again, it's about the kind of growth being measured. So like, how is it that legalism teaches us to live? Legalism is learning to live in obligation. It's learning to live by fear of that obligation. As theologian Dallas Willard says, the most important thing in your life is not what you do, it's who you are becoming. I feel like learning to live in obligation and fear is not learning to live as Jesus lived. I'm not sure that that's it. So then on the other side of the spectrum, right, legalism, and on this side, there's what maybe we would call it indulgence. Like you're measuring growth with sort of like a hedonistic kind of lean. It's the opposite end of the spectrum. It's sort of like abandoning this faith of legalism, which is controlled by obligation and fear, and then embracing like a faith which is dictated by comfort. Comfort. Like, is this the easiest way? Will I have to experience any kind of discomfort? Will I have to be challenged? There's a pursuit of something, kind of, but it seems like this leads to almost like an ambitionless pursuit of faith. What are we measuring? Are we measuring like our level of comfort? Are we measuring our ability to like tune out and avoid difficulty or conflict or discomfort? Like again, this is definitely a way to learn to live, but I'm not sure that that's learning to live as Jesus lived either. So if our aim is learning to live as Jesus would if he were in our place, it doesn't seem that legalism or indulgence is going to help us a ton. I think mostly because both of those systems of measurement and growth depend almost solely on ourselves to do it. Now, we do have a call, right? We have a call to, we've talked about this, to repent, to change our minds, and then to believe, to act like it's true. Like, that's our calling. And learning to live like Jesus doesn't just depend on us. So again, our verse from 2 Corinthians, all of us are looking with unveiled faces at the glory of the Lord as if we were looking in a mirror. We are being transformed into that same image from one degree of glory to the next degree of glory. This comes from the Lord, who is the Spirit. Who we are becoming is first and foremost a work of God through God's Spirit given to us in grace. We become like Jesus through grace. Grace is the context. Grace is the reason. Grace is the means. So one of the other verses that we heard read today is from Ephesians 2. Maybe you've heard this before. For by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not your own doing. It's the gift of God. So by grace you are saved. It is a gift. Well, if you'll join me for a moment and get a little technical, I think this is one of the places in Scripture where we miss out a little bit because of the translation from Greek to English. Now, I'm not a Greek scholar, so bear with me. But I think we tend to read this verse as though something like happened in the past. We were saved by grace, right? Now, there isn't solid agreement from Greek scholars on the closest Greek to English translation of "you have been saved." By grace, you have been saved. Sometimes it's translated as "you have been saved." Sometimes it's "you are saved." And sometimes it's "you are being saved." So there's not agreement. Either way, the Greek tense that's used here points to being saved as something that happened that has continuing effects. Does that make sense? It's ongoing. It's an ongoing thing. So I think the other spot where we might lose something in translation is what it means that we are being saved. So that word "saved," okay? So the Greek word, the Greek root that's translated as "save" is sozo. Sozo. Sozo points to being or making someone whole. So it's used 120 times in the New Testament, and besides being translated as "save," sozo is also translated into English as "heal," "make well," "deliver," and "restore." Now, it's the same root word that Jesus uses in Mark 5 when the bleeding woman comes to him to touch his cloak to be healed, and he says to her, "Your faith has made you well." Sozo is the word there that's translated into "made you well." And it's the same root word that's used in John 3:17, right after John 3:16, that we heard about last week. In verse 17, that God did not send Jesus into the world to condemn the world, but in order that the world might be saved, sozo, through him. So there's a bigger sort of concept of what that means. We are being saved. We are being made whole. We are being rescued, liberated. And that's happening past, present, and future. It happened then, it's happening now, and it's ongoing. We are becoming, right? We're becoming. And then, and why? And why? Because of grace. For by grace, you are being saved. You have been saved. By grace, you have been saved. By grace, you are being made whole. By grace, you are becoming. We were made to live by grace. By grace. Grace is favor. Grace is benevolence. Grace is a gift. Grace is provision. The Greek word for grace is charis. It's where we get the word, like the base of the word charity. Charis. When we receive grace from God, we are receiving something that we do not have out of the abundance that God does have. Grace is God doing something that we are not able to do, and God doing it willingly and freely. And grace is what calls us to change, and grace is what empowers us to be able to do it. It's not all on us. I think it's easy to think of grace as like a one-time thing. You know, we talked about the four-part gospel. Last week, we talked about these four chapters, you know, creation, fall, redemption, renewal. And one of the things that Pastor Justin said was, you know, which of these are you familiar with? If you grew up in church, if you grew up hearing about Jesus, the gospel, so much emphasis in the American church particularly has been on those middle two, sort of like the fall and redemption. And that's, I think, where we hear grace a lot. By God's grace. That's true. I'm not saying it's not true. It's true. But it's not just a one-time thing. So even as we see here, grace is ongoing. It is continuing. Grace is the impetus of our becoming more like Jesus. Every day, all the time. Grace is God's activity in our lives. Past, present, future. Grace reminds us that God is all about who we are becoming. It's not just on us. Grace is God's abundance being made available to us now and every day. There's a quote from author Richard Foster that you'll see in your workbook this week if you're walking through the curriculum. This is a part of it. In the terrain of life with God, grace is not a ticket to heaven, but the earth under our feet on the road with Christ. It grounds us in reality and guides us along the path of discipleship. Grace saves us from life without God. Even more, it empowers us for life with God. Not just a one-time deal. Who we are becoming, who we're becoming is where our story and God's story, that's where those two stories meet. And at that intersection of our stories is grace. It's grace. I read this week that grace is the state in which we go about our practice of life. It is grace that we are not expected to go from like 0 to 100 immediately. Like being expected to go from learning the names of guitar strings and what a fret is to like playing like Carlos Santana on day one. It's grace that is not it. Instead, we experience grace every day that we pick up the guitar and choose to strum or pick or play with others. Grace is why that we can look back on our stories, the good parts, the hard parts, the successes, the failures, and recognize where God might have been working. It's a grace to look back on your life and on yourself in a previous season and think, I can't believe myself. I can't believe I thought that. I can't believe I made that decision. I was such an idiot. You know, I can't believe. Maybe we could consider like cringe level as a measurement of growth. How much you cringe at your past self. Growth. But what a grace. What a grace to be standing here and be able to cringe back at yourself. It is grace to see growth in your life. Grace enables us to look back at who we've been, and grace enables us to look forward to who we are becoming, to who we're becoming. As we turn the corner here this morning, I've got a challenge to you this week. I want to encourage you and challenge you. My challenge to you this week is to be on the lookout for grace and to be on the lookout for fruit, grace and fruit. So this week's Learning to Live practice, every week there's a practice, like sort of a weekly practice. You'll see it at the beginning of each week. And this week's practice is to sit with stillness. Sit with stillness. I know that's not always fun. But my challenge to you is to make some time to sit with stillness. This week, a few minutes, sit with stillness and look for grace. Take a look back. So in your small group, if you're in a small group, you're going to have an opportunity, if you haven't already, to share part of your story. We do sort of, there's a storytelling experience that our small groups do together. And as you prepare for that, or even if you're not in a group at this point, I would encourage you to set aside a few minutes to just reflect on your story. By yourself, you can do it by yourself, to reflect on a past season, the past you, and be on the lookout for grace. Where do you see grace at work? And then I would encourage you to take a look at the now. In your time of reflection, look at now. Where do you see grace operating in your life right now? Where do you see it at work? Where is grace inviting you to wholeness? I feel like recognizing the measure of grace in our lives seems like a good place to start as we consider who we're becoming. Be on the lookout for grace. And then be on the lookout for fruit. Be on the lookout for fruit. So the last scripture text you heard read this morning was from Galatians 5. You maybe have heard it before. Galatians 5 names the fruit of another gracious gift from God, the Spirit. The Spirit. The Spirit has been graciously given. Like we could say, we are graced with the Spirit's presence as we become. And we know that the Spirit's presence is with us because the Spirit's presence and work produce fruit in us. They produce something in us. Love, joy, peace, patience, kindness, generosity, faithfulness, gentleness, self-control. So as you think about the different aspects of your life right now, your spiritual life, your physical life, your relationships, your emotional health, your mental health, how you spend your money, how you make your money, where you live, how you spend your time, who you spend your time with. How does your life reflect the fruit of the Spirit? And what might it mean to see Spirit fruit in every aspect of your life? As a wise theologian and pastor named Lisa Rodriguez Watson has said, you will never be what you are not now becoming. You will never be what you are not now becoming. So as you look to the future at who you might be in a year from now, in 5 years from now, in 10 years from now, who is the Spirit inviting you to become? Who is the Spirit inviting you to become? And what might the first next step be that God is graciously inviting you to take in that direction? Friends, my prayer for us this week is that we would recognize the invitation to become more like Jesus, and that we would be reminded that grace, it is grace, which is God's abundance freely given, both makes the ask and enables our growing. Would you pray with me?